The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards with another edition of the Armchair Traveler from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And for the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from National Geographic Traveler. And I just want to say that we mentioned it was the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Officially, as of July 1st, we have become the North Carolina Reading Service, and there'll be more details about that in the days ahead. Now on to today's event, and before we begin our journey, please let me remind you that we, neither the Triangle Radio Reading Service nor I, are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles we're going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. Today on Armchair Traveler, we head to the Land of Light. And that's how writer guide Anne Farrar describes Portugal, noting everything is illuminated in Portugal. And here's how to bask in the glow of the world's most radiant destination. Let's find out. It's bright, achingly bright. I squint in the sunlight as I drive, winding north from Lisbon in late afternoon. When I take a turn off from the highway and emerge from a tunnel, I see my destination, Porto, shimmering in the Iberian sun. Awash in faded hues and tiles, Portugal's second-largest city is a panorama of blue, yellow, brown, and green. The colors calm me, they soothe my eyes and slow me down. It's October, and the breeze is cool. Out of the car and walking a tangle of streets and alleyways, I follow a medley floating in the air and find a man with his old street organ. He has a fuzzy chicken pecking its seeds on a table, almost as if it's dancing to the music. Behind him, the sun casts a silhouette, etched in light, of an organ grinder against a wall of buildings. It looks like a Hague School painting. I toss a euro into the man's basket, snap a photo, and keep walking. But not far. I can barely move a block without pausing to admire a stucco wall disappearing into shadows, the shimmer of a red-tiled rooftop, the brilliant reflection of sun hitting a white sheet of laundry hanging out to dry. For the past year or two, it seemed as if every other person I met said they had just been or were going to Portugal. They'd say Lisbon was lovely, the Alentejo timeless, Portico magical. But when I asked why, their words seemed to fail. Go see for yourself, they'd say. Now I'm one of them, camera in hand, seeking something elusive. Enlightenment that lasts, a way to hold on to the fleeting moments we have when we travel. The light filters through the streets like a stream through the reeds. It plays tricks on where it'll land, splashing about, reflecting in beautiful faceted angles. Click, the blue and white tiles. Click, reflections of pastries in a window. Click, dust kicked up by workers restoring centuries-old buildings. More scenes, the UNESCO-inscribed monastery of Cerro de Pilar, the Gothic Church of St. Francis, a man in a green fedora. People are gathering at the Dom Luis Bridge to watch the sunset. At a riverside cafe, a family chatters and laughs as they nibble Porto's famous salted cod dish, bacalhau. Click. To the lighthouse, Nazaré. On the flight over, I sat next to a traveler who shared a not very well-kept secret. Nazaré is one of the most attractive beach towns in Portugal, with some of the largest waves in the world. Big wave season is from October to May, and in November 2017, Brazilian surfer Rodrigo Coxa made history by riding an 80-foot roller, breaking the world record for the highest wave ever surfed. Such mastery of the seas has a precedent. From the early 15th to the 17th centuries, Portuguese seafarers ruled the waves, launching a European age of discovery. Prince Henry the Navigator urged his captains ever onward in search of a route to India, leading to a vast trading empire that stretched from Africa and the Arabian Peninsula to South America and the Caribbean. Sailors navigated by the stars and relied on lighthouses to guide them safely away from the rocks. The Nazaré Lighthouse has functioned since 1903, and it's the best overlook in the area, a front-row seat on the surfing action. From the light's perch in a former fort, I see the wide white sand stretching out on either side of the promontory. Next to me, hardy surfers with beers in hand are scanning the water, planning their next waves. There's an autumn chill in the air, but I can imagine these sands teeming in the summertime. City of Reflection, Lisbon. This city is crisp in a starched shirt, or as a starched shirt. The scent of bread and scrubbed cobblestone lures me down through the capital's passages and narrow streets. An espresso, a convivial greeting, and pastel de nata, an eggy custard tart, start the day. Customers lean on the Letteria Academica Cafe's glass counter and are attended by a single, perfectly poised barista, accustomed to this morning choreography. As I walk the streets, the Castello de San Jorge looms like a giant, its presence secured in history. Celts, Romans, Moors all called this place home at one point, each leaving behind a piece of their civilization for future residents to uncover. What strikes me most is the vitality of the city, ancient and faded but vibrant. Absorbed by the immensity, I keep missing, and we have several photographs here that she's going to talk about later, but we'll skip to those. I keep missing the details, as she continues. I'm drifting between the past and present, but then I shake free from my reflection when I see a beguiling church or watch as college students dunk each other in a fountain or pause for the changing of the guard in front of the Palacio de Belém. Suddenly, I'm back in the moment, looking for the next street, the next turn, the next vision to seize. Lightning on the horizon, Alentejo. I roll from hill to hill through the Alentejo region, a landscape soft on the eyes and the senses. Sunlight slices through the quirk trees. A white bull sleeping in a field seems like a ghostly apparition. Pigs shuffle from one acorn, belata, to another, foraging over the nutty flavor that gives Iberian ham its richness. Castles and churches dot the hilltops. They are relics from the past, yet they retain power in the present. It's shoulder season, and the streets are empty save for a couple of stocky men with weathered faces and hands walking home from the pub. Olive trees frame the driveway of farm estate São Lourenço do Baracal outside of Montserrat. Some of the owners tell me more than 1,000 years old. Gnarled yet still dropping olives, one tree grows within a few yards of a Neolithic stone that has stood sentinel for nearly 5,000 years. I imagine the conversations these two monuments have shared over the centuries. A storm rolls in, and the town of Montserrat appears spectral against the lavender sky. Lightning strikes, and the last rays of the day struggle to penetrate an ominous thunderhead. The golden hour, Sir Grace. I'm tired, but the hotel concierge says go. He marks an X on the map and shoves the paper into my hands. You won't be sorry, he says. I drive quickly through the town of Segres and take the 3 o'clock exit at the roundabout. Soon the land flattens out, and I see that cars are parked alongside the road. I keep driving until I find a spot to snuggle into. People are walking, laughing, and talking excitedly as the wind whips their hair. The crowd's energy surges with anticipation. Something spectacular is about to happen. I arrive at the end of the road to the westernmost point in Portugal. Atlantic waves crash against the cliffs of Segres. Seagulls ride the thermals, gliding ever higher. I settle into a gathering of about 100 people as an orange glow bursts through the clouds. At first, the silence washes over us as we witness the end of the day at the end of the world. Then someone holds up a glass of wine to make a toast. The sky changes from orange to purple to pastel shades of pink and blue. We walk back to our cars slowly as shadows devour the last glimmers of light. What a trip, huh? Well, there's more to come. Yep. Accompanying Ann Ferrara's article are some short pieces covering various aspects of what you might encounter when you visit Portugal. These come under different themes, and we'll identify those for you. And we're going to start with those venues that fall under the category of culture and museums. Let's begin. Portugal, with a population of just over 10 million, is nonetheless crammed with all the Baroque gilding that the gold of Brazil afforded. And its once stodgy scattering of museums has grown with an eye toward contemporary and quirky offerings, this according to writer John Critch. Batalha, Monastery of Batalha, A side trip off Portugal's main north-south highway takes you to this little country town, dominated by a spectacular convent and church that took more than 130 years to construct, starting in the 14th century. The convent was designed as a showcase of the Manuelin style. Portugal's highly ornamented architecture that incorporated Northern Europe and Moorish influences. The courtyards and stained glass, as well as its UNESCO World Heritage status, are worth the detour. Guimarães, historic center of Guimarães, the jewel of the north, boasts a lovingly restored old town, an evocative castle tower, and a CIAJG, that's Centro Internacional das Artes José de Guimarães, a recent and stunningly radical transformation of the city's municipal market, housing a private collection that juxtaposes contemporary art with folk art. Words on the old city wall reference Guimarães' place in history. Aqui nasceu Portugal. Portugal was born here. On to Lisbon, Museu Nacional Arte Antiga. Portugal's main repository of classical painting reveals much of the country's early artistic taste and guards the extraordinary Hieronymus Vaz triptych, Temptation of St. Anthony. After admiring it, explore one of Lisbon's most beautiful blocks, the Rua de Janelas Verdes, Street of Green Windows, and stroll the charming alleys of the Santos neighborhood. Now on to Porto and the Cervais Museum. In keeping with Porto's role as the main center for industry and design, this sleek, minimalist building houses the country's most daring showcase of contemporary international art. Come for the thought-provoking art installation. Stay for a walk in the sculpture-dotted 44-acre park, which includes formal flower gardens, tree groves, and elegant fountains. Now, back in Lisbon, we have the Museu de Faro. This small museum near the working-class Alfama district, where Portugal's plaintive ballads bemoaning fate, Fado, first emerged in the 1800s. It presents a vivid portrait of popular culture in Lisbon. Its archives offer a chance to listen to dozens of the greatest singers. The intimate auditorium showcases current vocalists, a low-key alternative to the commercialized Fado houses. Well, the next category we're going to check out is food and drinks. Portugal's cuisine has long resisted the encroachments of fusion or molecular gastronomy. Hearty to a fault, family-run restaurants churn out satisfying variants of bacalhau, salted cod, and impiri-piri chicken and ultra-sweet cakes. But here are some recent attempts to shake up the Portuguese palate. First, we go to Lisbon and Belcanto Bairro de Avilés. Top chef José Avilés's two dining meccas in the Chiado neighborhood share a love of reinvented Portuguese food. Belcanto boasts two Michelin stars and exquisite dishes with names like the Garden of the Goose that laid the golden eggs. Bairro de Avilés is a sprawling space housing a casual taberna or tavern, market, and cabernet. And if you'd like to check this out online, I'll give you this website here, belcanto.point.pt, barroavilés.pt. And it's actually two different websites, so let me give you the first one. I'll spell it, belcanto.pt, belcanto.point. The second one, barroavilés. That's Barrodoavilés.point. Now on to Porto and O Paparico. Within a rustic and intimate setting, an Alsatian executive chef goes beyond the classic and expected seafood dish, bacalhau, by playing with colors and combinations yet staying loyal to Portugality. The title of one tasty menu, befitting one of the world's top capitals of many culture. The wine cellar seems infinite, and the bar is worth lingering over. And you can linger over it online at opaparico.com, O-P-A-P-A-R-I-C-O, opaparico.com. Now back to Lisbon, and we have Peixaria de Esquina. Another of Portugal's cookbook mainstays, Vitor Sobral, has opened modestly priced casual tacos in Lisbon and Brazil, that hew closer to traditional flavors yet with lightness and flair, such as the Azorean tuna with mango, peppers, and pennyroyal. At his all-seafood showcase, Pesaria de Esquina, try the squid sautéed with shiitake mushrooms, broad beans, and coriander. And if you want to learn more about the Pesaria, here we go. Check this out. I'll spell it out for you. PEIXARIADAESQUINA. And that's PesariaDesquina.com. Lisbon, Epur, PEPUR. Opened a year ago, this restaurant is a harbinger of Portuguese cuisine's future. The chef is French, the menu and decor minimalist. Dishes honor the restaurant's name and their focus on essential local ingredients, from rabbit to tuna to prized black pork. These dishes don't so much shout as gently hum. Located across the street from the National Art School, the dining room also has one of the city's best panoramas. Easy website here, epur.point, E-P-U-R, epur.pt. And then we have Porto, Majestic Cafe. If you tire of experimentation and seek a proper finish to the meal, or if you're famished after an afternoon's amblings, this pastry palace is a classic of the genre, along with Lisbon's Pastelaria Versailles. Approaching their centennials, both are resplendently mirrored examples of a Beaux Arts heyday. Do as the locals do. Pair an eggy pastry with a strong bica or espresso. And a couple of websites for you. One is CafeMajestic.com, CafeMajestic.com. Then we have Facebook.com/Pastelaria Versailles. And I'm going to spell that one out for you. Ready? Facebook.com and then PASTELARIA, Pastelaria Versailles, VERSAILLES. And a couple of captions for some photos on this page I'll read to you. The Alentejo region of Portugal is known for its cork forest, Roman ruins, and vineyards such as Torre de Palma, which is pictured here, a design-centric hotel, and a winery near the town of Monfort. And then we have Porto's Majestic Cafe has been serving up Art Nouveau glamour, strong coffee, and eggy pastries for almost 100 years. Try the Rebandas, the Majestic's take on French toast, paired with a glass of tawny port. Interesting combination for breakfast, huh? All right, on to festivals and tents, our next category. Despite the Pelopirinos' old storm pillories for transgressions that are ubiquitous in nearly every town, Portugal's spirit for celebration always wins out. What else can you say about a country that hosts not only the pavilions for countless pilgrims who come to honor the miracle of Our Lady of Fatima, but also the huge sound stages of Lisbon's own crazed version of the Rock in Rio festival? So, got a lot to see here. First in Lisbon, Feast of St. Anthony. Throughout June, the squares and neighborhoods of Lisbon take turns celebrating the city's patron saint, who was apparently quite the seafood maven. The entire city, but especially touristic Alfama, is enveloped in the scent of grilled sardines, traditionally eaten whole, heaped on broa, that's Portuguese cornbread, and washed down with plenty of wine. Drum-pounding parades are also staged. And then we got Goleje, or the horse fair. And in central Portugal, this autumn gathering that coincides with the Feast of St. Martin draws hundreds of regional riders showing off not just their equine mounts, but also their formal costumes featuring traditional waistcoats and blazers and matching flat hats. This is one of the best places to get in touch with rural Portugal and to gobble the finest chestnuts. And Feira de Golenega, golega.com is how you get more information online about this. I'll spell it all out for you. FEIRADAGOLEGA.com. And that's Goleje, Fiera de Goleje. All right, let's move on to Sines. When you get into Romance languages, while they may look alike, they are pronounced differently. In Portugal, it's Sines. And Festival Musicas do Mundo, the large town of Sines, along the Alentejo coast, is invaded every July, the 18th through the 27th this year, by crowds of enthusiasts eager to hear some of the top world music performers from all over the planet amid sea breezes and fireworks. More information at fmmsines.pt. fmmsines.point. Lisbon Jazz in August. Some of Europe's most erudite practitioners of contemporary jazz perform long into balmy nights at the outdoor amphitheater on the grounds of Lisbon's world-class Gulbenkian Museum. And you can check all that out at gulbenkian.point. Jazz Mogosto, and I'll spell this one out, G-U-L-B-E-N-K-I-A-N, gulbenkian.pt, and then slash jazz, and then Imagosto, and that's E-M-A-G-O-S-T-O. And then we have Lake Idaha, Lake Idaha Anova. Boom, Portugal's version of Nevada's Burning Man, and we talked about that about a year ago on an Armchair Traveler, New Age Conclave Gathering every other year, the next one in 2020, on the mountainous shores of Lake Idaha de Nova. The festival agenda is filled with trance music, art installations, and alt culture experiences. BoomFestival.org will get you what you need to know online, BoomFestival.org. So quite the array of things there, huh? Well, how about for people who enjoy nature and outdoors? Got something for you here. For some, the urge to explore nature can be satisfied with a trip to Lisbon's Oceanário, one of the world's great aquariums. But Portugal's beckoning sands, thundering surf, and meandering rivers will not be denied. Now, beyond Lisbon, beaches, solitary beachcombing, and windsurfing can be found within an hour of the global capital of what was once a great seafaring empire. Guincho, just beyond gentrified Casas, is the best of them. Difficult to reach by public transport, the Arrabida Peninsula, just south of Lisbon, is dotted with small beaches and wild, winding heights. Then we go to southwest Portugal, the Vicentina Coast, and along the Atlantic, where the Alentejo meets the Algarve, a number of long beaches seem to extend forever. And Odeci, and let's see, the other one is Zumzigira de Mar, are both better known, with nearby lagoons attracting some of Europe's spectacular migratory birds. The jagged cliffs of Cabo de São Vicente evoke Ireland and are situated near where the first Portuguese caravel set off into the unknown. Alentejo, and that is spelled, by the way, A-L-E-N-T-E-J-O. And in Alentejo, we have the Almendres Cromlech, the most extensive and impressive of Iberia's many archaeological finds. The stone monoliths of this circular mini-Stonehenge were stumbled upon nearly 50 years ago. Walks and drives along dirt roads to Alentejo's distinctive cork forest, with gnarled black trunks numbered and striped every 9 years, supplement the site's abiding mystery. Then we head to central Portugal and Serra da Estrela. The Star Mountain Range is the only place in Portugal where it's regularly snows. Skiing is possible, but better yet are the hikes along its 60-mile-long stretch of rolling ridges. This isn't exactly heavy-duty mountaineering, but a chance to stroll in lofty mist alongside shepherds and their flocks. And north of the Douro Valley, Pedras Salgadas Spa and Nature Park. At this old-timey sanitarium and bottling plant for the country's most popular sparkling water, the sleepy thermal spa has been given new life by way of modernist cabins and treehouses created by avant-garde architects for vacation rentals. And they have an online site. It's pedrasogadaspark.com. Let me spell that for you. P-E-D-R-A-S-S-A-L-G-A-D-A-S-park.com. pedrasogadaspark.com. Now, how about places to stay as we round out our trip to Portugal? Well, here we go. Rooms in Portugal come with a view as well as considerable historic and architectural heft, while state-run posadas or inns housed in old palaces or convents remain a unique experience. Many newer lodges outdo them with cutting-edge spas and the chance to partake in agrotourism. The Algarve has the Martinal Sagre Beach Family Resort. This upscale resort caters to multi-generational travelers. Adults can sip cocktails as kids learn how to surf. The concierge provides strollers, high chairs, or bottle sterilizers. Martinhal.com/Sagres gives you more information. Here you go. I'll spell it for you. M-A-R-T-I-N-H-A-L.com. Martinhal.com. sagres.com, and then it's /Sagres, and that's S-A-G-R-E-S. Lisbon, Variedade Palacio Santa Catarina. This currently renovated mansion with 19 rooms has one of the best vantage points in all of Lisbon, perched above the steep cobblestone alleys of the Baca neighborhood, a Bica neighborhood, and you can check it out at veridesc.point, veridesc.pt. And then we have the Douro Valley, Quinta de Valedo Wine Hotel. For the quintessence of Portugal's wine country, this 13-room wine estate hotel makes for the perfect frame for the magnificent Douro Valley. Guests sleep in either the manor house dating from 1733 or a new wing completed in 2012, both options set amid the sloping terraces of ripening vines, so you get to see the wine from the beginning. And quintadovalado.com is what you do to go online to get more information. Quinta, Quinto, Do, Vio, and Valado, V-A-L-L-A-D-O, QuintoValado.com. And back to the Alentejo area, and we have the Sao Lourenco de Baracal. Surprisingly, it's the countryside that many of Portugal's most daring architects have worked their minimalist magic, a humble working farm near Monserrat transformed by Eduardo Soto Moura. The Sao Lourenco de Baracal pampers with spare simplicity. Baracal.pt gets you more information. B-A-R-R-O-C-A-L, Baracal.point. And that's quite the tour of Portugal today on Armchair Traveler. And if you're going to stay close to home in July, let's give you some updates on some travel tips from the Carolina Road Trip Planner from the July-August 2019 issue of AAA Go Magazine. Now, of course, already taking place on the 4th were several events. We had the Death Park Walking Track in Kings Mountain, North Carolina. They call their event the Revolutionary 4th. And if you were up in Mountain Rest, South Carolina, they had Hillbilly Day on July 4th. The Duck 4th of July Parade was held in downtown Duck, North Carolina. Then Fireworks Spectacular was at Barefoot Landing, North Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Then they had the Freedom Fest in downtown Bryson City, North Carolina. This was a big street festival. And also we had on July 4th the concert with the Indigo Chorale Society, Kaminsky House Museum in Georgetown, South Carolina. Quite a unique place to visit. A lot of history there in Georgetown. And then we have the Lexington County Peach Festival on the 4th. This was held at the Gilbert Community Park in Gilbert, South Carolina. And, of course, if you were at Chimney Rock State Park in North Carolina from the 4th through today, you had the Weekend Family Fun event. This was animal encounters and challenges and rock climbing and so forth. A lot of fun there. And coming up yesterday, we had the Cowpens National Battlefield in Chesney, South Carolina, the Celebration of Freedom. So lots of things taking place on July 4th in both North and South Carolina, including the Great Freedom Train in the Great Smoky Mountains Railroad that was held in Bryson City, North Carolina, and even had apple pie sunset views aboard the Fontana Trestle, and a visit from Uncle Sam, quite quaint. Well, that's going to do it for today's edition of the Armchair Traveler. Hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service, reminding you the content of our program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. Comments and questions may be directed to 919-832-5138. Bye-bye.